Chapter 50. Northwestern Russia. The plane's left side dipped violently, stretching the seatbelt across Mitrap's lap and slamming his head into the window. He awoke and squinted through the glass, but there wasn't much to see. A wing with a disconcerting number of rivets missing, heavy snow streaking past the lights, and the darkness beyond. Another violent gust struck, but this time the plane rose, shoving him down in his seat with impressive force. He closed his eyes again. The weather was the pilot's problem. And while the Russians couldn't do much right, they did blizzards better than anyone. A long, terrified scream became audible, but he ignored it and let himself drift again. It was the first time in days that he'd been able to get fully asleep. There would be no more posthumous chess games with Joe Rickman. No more talk. Finally, he and his team had an opportunity to take action. Marcus Dumond, the source of the scream, believed that if their competition really was Pakistan, enough files had been released for the ISI to have traced the location of the hacker they were on their way to find. In fact, S-Wing operatives might have already been there, obtained Rickman's encryption key, and gone. If that was the case, the trip to Russia would be a complete waste of time, but still better than standing around Langley waiting for another gloating video to hit Kennedy's inbox. Rapp felt a hand close on his shoulder, followed by the voice of Scott Coleman shouting over the roar of the wind and straining engines. "We're going in. Crashing or landing? I'm not sure. The good news is that the pilot says we'll be fine. The bad news is that it looks like he's been crying." Rapp just nodded and went back to sleep. "Mitch, rise and shine. We made it." Rapp opened his eyes and stretched, looking around at the carnage on the small plane. Most of the overhead bins had given way during landing, leaving some of their gear strewn across empty seats and the rest on the floor. Charlie Wicker and Bruno McGraw were gathering everything up while Marcus Dumont clutched his laptop, looking queasy. He was standing near the cockpit as their sweat-soaked pilot threw his shoulder repeatedly against the door. It finally came free with a blast of wind nearly strong enough to knock him over. That didn't deter Dumont, though. He leapt through the opening and into the snow. The cold was both immediate and lung-searing. Rapp pulled on a white parka designed to camouflage him against the winter landscape and headed for the front. The stairs were down now, and he descended, pulling Dumont out of a snowbank and dusting him off.
"I shouldn't be here, Mitch. I'm a tech guy. This is ops. It's fucking freezing, and we're 100 miles from the middle of nowhere. We could get trapped out here. How would anybody help us? No one even knows we're here, do they? I told my girlfriend I was..."
"Marcus, shut up and try to relax." Rapp moved away, studying what little he could see. Beyond the circle of illumination generated by the plane, there was nothing but blackness. Inside the circle, there was nothing but snow. If anyone was out there, they'd have an advantage, but not much of one. Even a shooter with state-of-the-art optics would have to be within 10 yards to even pick out a target, let alone hit it. His men started throwing duffels out the door just as the muffled hum of a motor separated itself from the storm. A set of lights appeared a few moments later, mounted to a bright red tracked vehicle. Rapp unzipped his jacket for better access to his weapon as it came to a stop. The logo was Cyrillic, but below was an English translation. Shulyov Hunting and Snowmobile Tours. They'd gotten lucky when Nash found the outfitter. Their camp was only about 30 miles from where the Rickman files were being released by a Russian crook named Pavel Kadzin. Their cover was as a last-minute booking by a corporate team-building group. There wasn't time to create an elaborate legend, so Rapp just had to hope that Nash hadn't missed anything. After Istanbul, it wasn't a great time for him to get recognized in Russia. A figure in a North Face Himalayan suit jumped out of the vehicle and started running toward them. It wasn't until the person got within a few feet that Rapp could make out the face inside the hood. The woman's skin was a bit more windburned than the pictures he'd seen, but still unlined, with dark eyes and a long, straight nose. She was only 29, and as far as the CIA could tell, had spent nearly all of those years in this wilderness. Her father had started the company after leaving the Soviet Army and had run it until his death 2 years ago.
"Mr. Kramer," she said, extending a gloved hand, "I'm Irina Shulyov. I'm so sorry I wasn't here to meet you. We only just got word from the pilot that you are coming in. We never expected him to fly in this weather. Are you and your people all right?"
"Fine," Rapp said. regretting not putting Scott Coleman front and center to deal with her. He did easygoing charm a lot more convincingly. There was a little turbulence there at the end, but not too bad. Her expression was incredulous, and he realized that he'd overplayed his attempt to be disarming. Shulyov's clientele were probably accustomed to safer and more luxurious travel methods. In contrast, he and his men had spent half their lives stuffed into the back of C-130s. At least the aircraft they'd come in on that day had windows and wasn't a prime target for every radical old enough to lift a rocket launcher. "We heard there's a wolf pack in the area," he said, changing the subject. "Do you think we'll have a chance to get a few photos?" She looked past him at Coleman, who was still tossing duffels to McGraw and Wicker on the ground. Dumond had carved out a rough seat in the snow and was planted in it, trying to calm down. "That's a lot of gear." "We weren't sure what to bring, so I guess you could say we brought everything." "This is no problem," she said, still looking a bit confused. "Let me help you carry your bags to the truck." She started around Rapp, but he blocked her path and thumbed toward Dumond. "We can handle it. My friend over there got a little airsick on the way in, though. Maybe you could take him to your rig. A little sympathy wouldn't hurt either."
"Oh, I'm so sorry. Of course."
Chulyov rushed to his side and helped him up. Keeping an arm locked in his, she chatted encouragingly as they made their way across a snowpack.
"Cute,"
Charlie Wicker said, coming up next to Rapp.
"Your kind of woman."
Wicker was debatably one of the top five operatives in the world, and undisputably one of the top three snipers. He'd grown up in a small town in Wyoming hunting with his brothers. When he was 12, he'd gotten separated from them in a storm not unlike this one. After 3 days, everyone assumed he was dead and that they wouldn't find him until the snow melted in the spring. On day 4, he'd emerged from the wilderness without a scratch, dragging an antelope he'd shot. Rapp originally thought it was just a legend, but when Wicker left the SEALs to join Coleman's company, he'd pulled the man's file. In it was a copy of the news story, complete with a photo of a skinny kid with a big grin and a rifle towering over his back. Since then, not much had changed.
"Grab the gear and let's get out of here," Rapp said. "I want to be on the trail in an hour."